What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 98 of Star Wars Beneath Twin Suns, a massive breakdown podcast. We're coming to you today on a fantastic Sunday morning. Going to be talking about just a single episode today. It is kind of a standalone episode. It is called Trespass. And because it is a standalone episode, we were really able to dive deep into the trivia surrounding this episode. So we got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. But first, let's go ahead and get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined today by Kit Ketcha. And how are you doing today, Kit?
Oh, doing pretty fantastic as ever. I've spent my week more or less like completely buried in my daughter's robotics team's competition week and multiple days of competition. So it's just been like crazy hectic. But yeah, it all went well. They finished like seventh out of 24 teams and probably going to advance to the next round. So pretty exciting. And after all of that, I am very excited to have a whole day here to just chill out and talk about Star Wars, maybe play some Star Wars later. Finally started Jedi Survivor. It's pretty fun. So yeah, so I'm excited to kick this day off talking to you about Trespass. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I'm a little tired. I'm still in the midst of drinking my coffee and finishing that up. So if you hear me yawning, which hopefully you don't, because hopefully I'll edit it out if I do. But if I do yawn in the middle of this, I apologize in advance. But I'm also pretty excited to talk about Trespass. I had like semi-fond memories of this episode. I don't think it's a revolutionary episode or something like that, but I just remember enjoying it the first couple of times I watched it. I think it has some fun characters. And I had a realization when I was watching it today. The reason why I like this episode so much is because it's basically an episode of Star Trek TNG, but in Star Wars. Like that, it like the moral that it has and the story that it goes through and everything that it does. They're going to an unknown planet. There is an outpost there. The outpost has been wiped out. They don't know what's going on. They meet the locals. Someone wants to wipe out the locals. And in the end, you know, good wins out and they make peace with them and they move on. And I was like, this is literally an episode of TNG. Like, that's why I enjoyed it so much watching through it, because, you know, watching back and it's, you know, it's hard to tell a story like this in functionally 21 minutes. Right. And they definitely do have to cut through some stuff and kind of make some jumps. Like, this is something I think it would have benefited a lot from being a 2-part episode, not a 1-part episode, because it feels like they just, you know, they just rock it through to the conclusion of the story. And I think it suffers a little bit from that. But in the end, I still really, really enjoyed it. Like, I like the moral that they had and I love the Pantorans. I feel like this is the first time we see the Pantorans in Clone Wars. And I really love those characters for some reason. I loved Chairman Cho. And obviously I love, you know, Chuchi. And Chuchi ends up being a character that initially is kind of like a big character that ends up having a huge role, both in the Clone Wars and also in Bad Batch moving forward. So it's kind of cool to see her in this, where she's a little bit reminiscent of early Padme, right? Where she's like a kid that's a senator for some reason.
Yeah. You know, I think it's fair to say that there seems to be a strong sort of tradition of nepotism in the Galactic Republic, where it's sort of like someone is a senator and they raise their child to be the next senator. And then, like, despite the fact that allegedly senators are democratically elected, somehow it's always passed down from parent to child. You know, it's sort of this like small elite club of fantastically powerful ruling families, which lends some credence to the separatists' complaints. Like, you know, we definitely get a little bit of good guy Dooku. I think the more that the harder you think about how the Galactic Republic is actually set up and actually functions in practice as it is shown to us, the more you're like, Dooku was right.
At least about some stuff.
At least about some stuff. Whether or not his methods for resolving it were correct or not, I'm sure people will debate for as long as Star Wars continues to be a thing. But but yeah, certainly raises some interesting questions. But, you know, we've got some folks like Chuchi, who, despite almost certainly being the beneficiary of nepotism, is still a good-hearted person and wants to do the right thing. So yeah, so this is our first introduction to her, and it's a good one, I think.
I like the behind the scenes on this episode that talks about how basically George had like a thing he wanted to tell a Western, like a classic Western story of, you know, people pushing into this frontier wasteland and there already being natives there that kind of push back against, you know, a technologically superior thing. That's a very typical George Lucas story, isn't it? Like specifically that right there. I mean, that's basically the entirety of what the rebels were against the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, you know, it's a little more subtle than that, but I thought it was interesting that he basically went out into the Badlands in California and took a bunch of pictures and then came back and had them, you know, printed in black and white and was like, this is what I want this to look like.
Right.
And so Dave Filoni took that and meshed it with some old original Ralph McQuarrie concept art for like Hoth, and not even necessarily Hoth at the time, but like an ice world. Like he just did concept art of an ice world. And some of that was taken and put into Hoth, but for Hoth, they used a lot of like snow. And then so for this one, he's like, oh, well, we'll use like actual ice structures, like huge ice mountains and glaciers and, you know, bridges and stuff like that. And so it ended up coming to pass. And I think it looks really, really cool. And part of me, like in my heart, is like, this is season one. This is a long time ago. I wonder how much fun George Lucas had with this, where he was like able to do these little tiny, like small scale stories in his own universe and have them done pretty much the way he wanted. But he just like spoke his vision to Filoni. He's like, I want to do a Western with natives being, you know, trodden upon by the colonizing people. And I want it to be on like a black and white version of the California Badlands.
Right.
And Dave Filoni just like takes all that and like creates this story and then ships it out there. And like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it is. It is cool. And, you know, the obviously a lot of that concept art that was used, you know, one of the comments I think from the featurette is that there's kind of a lot of blue tones to it. You know, a lot of the like the ice and stuff having kind of those blue light tones. And with the filming for Hoth, they were filming on location in actual snowy climates. And obviously then they were white. They were not blue at all. And so there was kind of a lot, you know, because they didn't have ice structures. They didn't have the technology to just digitally make things happen at the time. And, you know, that film came out. And so I think they were able to kind of take some of those ideas and bring them to life here in a way that they didn't in, you know, the original depiction of an ice world in Star Wars. And so here they were able to really lean hard into that ice as a structural feature, which comes through and looks super cool. And then they got really into the snow. Who was it? It was Joel Aaron. Was the person in charge of like the special effects for the snow. And so they had all kinds of different densities and like types of snow and speeds of the snow falling. And they went really deep into the snow, and it was so subtly done that I think it adds to the storytelling without you even realizing it's happening until it's been called out. But if you watch this episode knowing that they're intentionally altering the snowstorm to reflect the emotional tone of the story, then you can immediately see what's happening in a way that's almost invisible otherwise. And, you know, we can kind of call some of that out, you know, but there are some kind of quieter moments and, you know, the blizzard sort of lets up and we just have snow sort of slowly drifting about, and then, you know, tense battle scenes and the snow is driving down and almost sideways at times. And yeah, it's definitely some really cool visuals. Lots of whiteouts, lots of sort of like just kind of the stark like lines of mountains and landscape shapes vaguely visible through this driving snow that they've done. So as sort of a visual experience that stands apart from a lot of what we see elsewhere in the Clone Wars, I feel like this was a huge success.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it did a great job. I mean, in the behind the scenes featurette, they're kind of like, they show the exact moment where like there's the blizzard has picked up an intensity over the course of the episode, right? Mm-hmm. As the conflict has escalated with the Talls. And then when Chuchi makes the decision to, you know, she throws down her arms and she says, you know, it's going to be peaceful. Like, we're not going to fight you. The blizzard lets up immediately and it like clears up. And yeah, like you, I didn't notice it during the episode, but then listening to Filoni talk about it and watching the scenes back, you're like, wow, it's so apparent. And it marks like an immediate tonal shift.
Right.
Right. You know, so I really do appreciate the subtleties like that. Honestly, the thing that I loved about this episode, potentially the most, besides it being a Star Trek episode, was that the beginning of the episode makes it feel like a horror episode, right? Mm. Like there's a little bit of horror. And I don't know if it's because Star Wars never actually really dives into horror, but they take stuff from horror. Like, do you remember when we were talking about The Mandalorian and Captain Teva is like going out into space and he finds that like destroyed shuttle?
Oh, right? Yeah.
And like that, it's so scary, even though it's not, there's not anything like really scary about it, but you're so on edge. The whole beginning of this episode where they find the base and the base has been wiped out and everyone's dead. And then they find the droid base and the droids have been wiped out too. And like at the beginning of the episode, I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be something like, is it like a zombie apocalypse or something like that? Right. Like Star Wars, especially Clone Wars, does horror really well, even though they never fully go, like they never, you know, they never fully fall over that edge into it actually being scary stuff. But they set up the tension very nicely.
Right.
And it makes me really appreciate it.
Yeah. So the opening of this episode, I think, does do a really good job of setting up some tension. However, it's also, I think, the source of my primary complaint about this episode. So we've, you know, just, I guess, to kind of dive into it, we've got some clone troopers being led by Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin and Captain Rex coming in to land on the frozen planet of Ordo Plutonia. And, you know, the setup that we've kind of had is that, you know, there was a clone security force stationed here and they've lost all contact. And so they are heading to the planet to find out what happened. They also have C-3PO and R2-D2, as well as a group of Pantoran political officials, including, of course, Senator Chuchi and then Chairman Chi-Cho. The chairman is quite forceful, and obviously, as you noted, Chuchi is a very young senator here, and certainly at the outset of this episode displays a significant lack of confidence, especially in the face of the much older and far more aggressive and authoritarian Chairman Chi-Cho,
who points out that he's been chairman since before she was born.
Right.
Right. For some back info on Chi-Cho, right? So obviously, like the initial focus of this story was like that Western natives versus, you know, whatever force is coming in. The Chairman Cho focus was South African, as you may be able to tell by his accent a little bit. But specifically what they were looking for here was they were looking, the voice actor, I believe his name is Brian George, was looking for like taking inspiration from apartheid in South Africa, right? And so that's kind of where this character comes from. He said that he watched, you know, interviews of these people who were kind of like the faces of apartheid in South Africa, and the way they would talk and the way they, you know, would make it us versus them. There's the others over there. Be angry at the others, right? He took that and he put that into his performance for this character. So it's a little bit of a blending of you know, scenarios here, but it kind of works out. It kind of all ends up being one unified picture, which I quite liked.
Yeah. I think the main thing that kind of stands out to me as maybe weakening the plot of this episode is that there appears to be absolutely no reason for anybody to be on Ordo Plutonia at all. There's no explanation as to why the Separatists would have bothered to put a force there, aside from that the Republic put a force there, which is a believable reason. But it wasn't like it. most of the time in, you know, kind of the structure of these stories, they give us some sort of reason for why some random uninhabited moon or planet has a base on it. Like, it's a communication station. Like, oh, okay, so they needed some place to put a station. This was convenient. You know, or it's a mining station. There's some reason to be on this, like, inhospitable rock floating in space. And they give us absolutely no reason for being here, except that the Pantoran chairman wanted it protected by the Republic because he considered it Pantoran territory. And while that is actually entirely believable in the real world, again, in the real world, people would absolutely build a base somewhere because somebody else has a base nearby. People would absolutely say, well, we're going to claim this territory basically to stick it to anybody else. Certainly believable. Doesn't really make for good fiction, though. At least not the way it's presented here for me. It felt unconvincing and just sort of like pointless. So that's my main, literally, I think, probably my only real complaint about this episode is that the vehemence with which Chairman Chicho, boy, oh boy, I'm just going to struggle with that name all day today.
Just
I think,
Chairman Cho, right? Just yeah, Chairman Cho. Yeah.
There we go. Chairman Cho, the level of dedication he has to claiming Ordo Plutonia, which appears to have they're not mining. There's no resources there. There's no creatures that are of some value. There appears to be no strategic, economic, or even diplomatic value to claiming this planet. You know, he notes they're the only civilized species in the system that they know of. And so why he specifically, right? Because not everybody on Pantora feels that way, as we'll discover. But why he is specifically so dedicated to claiming it is never answered. And that makes it feel a bit flimsy as a motivation. It makes his character feel a bit one-dimensional. And so that's sort of my complaint. I wanted to call it out now so that I don't have to harp on it the whole time. I don't want to be Daniel Downer the whole time here, but that's just sort of...
I didn't have an issue with him being one-dimensional because I thought that's like, that is what his character is. Even the voice actor said, like, you know, not every character needs to learn a lesson. Some characters just, they are who they are and they die who they are, and that's how their story goes. I got the feeling that he was the person who was like, that's why he was there. Why does the chairman, which is effectively like the president of their planet, why does he personally need to be on an expedition to, I got the feeling he, and again, you know, the fortune cookie is, you know, arrogance diminishes wisdom, right? He's arrogant. He likes to be in charge. He's claiming it so he can say he claimed it. And that's literally the only reason, like no reason other than that. He wants to go put his damn flag on that moon so he could come back and say that he did it. And if there's a species there, he will wipe that species out so he can say he wiped out that species, right? And it's not even necessarily for the Pantoran people. It's for him and his like need and desire and almost like a little bit of like a bloodlust, right? Like he wants to have an enemy that he can destroy. He wants to have a territory that he can conquer. So he did something for the Pantoran people to satisfy his own weird desire to be important, even though no one really cares on Pantora. They're not interested in this battle, right? He's only got a single squadron of clone troopers, right? It's not like he's leading this massive invading force. He just wants to go out and do it to satisfy his own, you know, ego, basically, to do this thing. And he tries to make it seem like it's a bigger deal than it is. Again, it's an ego thing, right? Like he says, like, I died for my people in the end. And
right.
Chuchi's like, your people didn't want this. You died for you. You know, she doesn't say this, but this is the moral that I got. It's like, you didn't die for your people. You died for you.
Yeah.
Your people didn't want this. They called you out of order. And he literally can't believe it. Like, that's the last thing he hears. He's like, no, that's impossible. That could never have happened. Right. So I got the feeling that this guy was just, he'd been in charge for a while and he was basically just an egomaniac. And he was using the excuse of what the Pantorans wanted for him to satisfy his own selfish desire to conquer and and defeat and be more important than he really is. Because really, when you look at it, Pandora's not really that important of a place, no. Right? Like, they're a small little backwoods, you know, planet. They're a moon. Freaking Ordo Plutonia is the planet that the Pantorans are orbiting around. Like, Pantora's a moon orbiting around this larger planet, right? I got the feeling that he was trying to make things more important than they really were, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I certainly got that feeling. And there are a few points in the episode that I'll call out as we go through where I felt like there's some subtext that suggests that maybe there's more going on that we just don't get into because it's not really directly relevant to the plot of the episode. Although there are a few times where I feel like maybe it is directly relevant. You know, I think it's almost implied that like he may actually have known that there might be a sentient species here.
Right.
And that may even be the reason that he originally wanted the Republic to send troops.
Right. So they would get killed so it could draw them into a conflict. And then he would be able to use that as an excuse to wipe out the sentient species and conquer the planet, basically.
Yeah. And I kind of wish they would have explicitly gone there because it would have made him a more convincing villain. In the end, he just kind of comes across as sort of pathetic, which is fine, I guess, but it didn't grab me in the way that I hoped that it would. So, it, you know, could be a me problem, I'll admit, but we're about 2 minutes into the episode at this point. So let's keep.
Well, so.
Keep rolling.
Yeah. So basically, you know, the chairman is already kind of like early in the episode butting heads with pretty much everyone, right? Like he's bossing around the stormtroopers. He's trying to boss around the Jedi. Obi-Wan is basically telling him that, like, you know, you may say a bunch of things, but really it's the Senate that gets to decide. And Chairman Cho's like, well, thank goodness we have a senator here because the Jedi serve the Senate. And right. So he then, you know, kind of is bullying Chuchi into saying the things that he wants. They arrive at the local base. Obviously, all the clone troopers are dead. Very spooky. He's very quick to blame the separatist for this. And this kind of goes along with what I was saying about him trying to make things more important than they are, right? He wants to be like, look, see, the separatists think there's value in this moon, too. That's why they invaded. And they're like, I don't know if it was the separatists because they didn't take any of the information. The consoles are untouched. They go out searching and they find a separatist base, and the separatist base is also destroyed. In a similar manner, right? And the only clue they really end up getting it is that there's a large footprint in the snow and a brief image of a droid, you know, sending out a distress call before being dismantled, basically. But Senator or Chairman Cho is like very adamant that there's something, you know, going on here. And even Chuchi at this point stands up for herself a little bit. It's like, it really doesn't make sense that the separatist would... You know, it doesn't make sense that the separatists would be the ones who do this. Like, maybe the world isn't uninhabited. And Chairman Cho does not like that suggestion. Not one bit.
Right. Yeah. He repeatedly uses the word animals and trespassers. You know, he's very much trying to sort of stir up the political waters and make it very clear that, like, whatever is happening here, it's somebody challenging Pantora's authority over Ordo Plutonia. So, you know, and I think he does actually get Chuchi to acknowledge that, you know, according to the Convention of Civilized Systems, which I think this is actually the only reference that we get in all of like TV or movie Star Wars to this, you know, whatever this legal document is. That if the Pantorans are the only native sentient species in the system, that technically the world does fall under their sovereignty. So, you know, there's, you know, a bit of foreshadowing, of course, there. So they, as they're, the clones are kind of scouting and examining, you know, obviously the video suggests that it was some third party as they see sort of a furry white figure attacking the drone or the droid. And the only clues they find beyond that are a footprint in the snow. Suggesting that know, there's some sort of creature behind these attacks.
And up to this point, it's still pretty much like a horror episode up until this point. Diverges from here to become a more political episode. And I wish one of these days they're going to do a full horror episode, and it's going to be great. And I'm excited to see it. I want to know if they're going to do it in Bad Batch, which, by the way, the Bad Batch season 3 trailer came out.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely incredible. Excited. If you guys haven't seen it, you need to watch. I literally got goosebumps at the end of it. It's amazing.
Some people are wetting themselves about
a certain character returning from the supposed dead. But you know what? I don't care about that at all. Yeah. I'm just happy to see the character again, because the character is one of my favorites from the Clone Wars. And, you know, no spoilers, but go watch the trailer if you haven't already. So at this point in time, everybody except for Chairman Cho has pretty much come to the realization that this planet is probably not uninhabited.
Yeah.
That there's probably something else on this planet, because it killed both the Separatists and the Republic. And Obi-Wan and Anakin are like, we're going to go out and find it. So the droids were investigating this valley when they were attacked. Like, we're going to go out into the valley and we're going to see what's going on. Everyone except for Chairman Cho is on board with this plan. Chairman Cho is like, absolutely not. There's, explorers have been here for hundreds of years from Pantora, and we've never found any signs of life. I think this is one of the times when I was like, really? You've never found any signs of life?
Right.
Like, maybe you're completely telling the truth here.
Yeah. Yeah. Me think of the politician doth protest too much.
Yep.
yeah. This is one of those areas where I was like, boy, feels like there's maybe some subtext here suggesting that he already knows that there is somebody else living here and doesn't want the Jedi to throw a wrench in the works.
I liked his arrogance of being like, because we exist nearby, this moon is ours, with a complete disregard for the fact that other beings might have already lived there. He's like, this is Pantora's moon. It's like, you haven't even been here long enough to know whether anything lives here, and you're claiming it as your own. Right. Like, that's the arrogance that I think the fortune cookie in the beginning is kind of, you know, pushing towards. But
yeah,
Obi-Wan and Anakin do manage to find these beings. They're sentient, a bit primitive. Right. But as Obi-Wan points out, maybe even smarter than them, you know, but they're called the Talls. And we've seen them before. I believe it was actually in A New Hope. There's one of them is sitting in the cantina in Mos Eisley when Obi-Wan and Luke head in there. So I don't believe they've ever gotten a main role in any Star Wars media, either before or since that. But they do get a starring feature here. They struggle for a little bit to be able to communicate, but they eventually are able to communicate through drawing pictures to each other and kind of just through general body language. And Anakin and Obi-Wan manage to make it clear that they come in peace, right? You know, they are the aliens in this case. They are understanding of that. They come in peace. They have no interest in fighting. And they set up a meeting between the Pantorans and Chairman Cho and the Talls. And they explicitly tell Chairman Cho, like, we told them that we would not be fighting them. We are not interested in violence. We are not interested in retribution. It turns out that they were fighting the Separatists, and the Republic commandos who were there kind of just got caught up in the middle of it. It was more of like an unfortunate accident than it was like they were specifically hunted and targeted. It was really just the Talls. I got the feeling the Talls just assumed everybody was an invader and they were all, you know, doing the same thing.
Right. Yeah. The droids probably got jumpy, started shooting, and then Talls were just like, okay.
Yeah.
You're all going away.
Chairman Cho, he refers to them as animals. He said it's not possible to lie to an animal, right? He doesn't believe that they're sentient. He again states that Plutonia is sovereign Pantoran property. And basically, he is deliberately like provoking a war. Like, that's what he is doing. He goes there. He straight up insults the leader of the Talls through C-3PO, who is most displeased to be stuck in this situation, right? He does everything possible to incite violence.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the line he actually, so we've got, you know, Obi-Wan says, with respect, Chairman Cho, these creatures, the Talls, aren't advanced enough to master space travel. I think they may have been here longer than Pantora. And the chairman replies, whoever they are, they belong to us. This whole system belongs to us.
Right.
It's just like, oh boy.
You know, if this were an episode of Andor, there would have been a depth to it that isn't present.
Mm-hmm.
I think from to your point earlier, and also to a point I made, this really would have benefited from being an arc, not from being a single episode. I think there just wasn't enough time to explore. And so to prevent confusion, they erred on the side of making him a cartoony bad villain, where he's just clearly a jerk.
Right.
And he doesn't need a reason to be a jerk. That's just who he is. And I do agree with you that I would have really liked to have seen this explored in an hour or maybe 40 minutes instead of just 20. But I think they did a good job given the short time frame that they had for this episode. I thought they did a good job, but they do end up needing that character to err on the side of being blatant and obvious, because there isn't really the time or the room for subtlety, you know, with the runtime that they had.
Yep. Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, the fall in action falls into place pretty quickly from here. So, you know, the chairman basically declares that it's war. However, you know, he tries to order the clone. This happens a couple times in the episode. He gives Rex an order, and Rex just sort of ignores him and then looks at Anakin.
Right.
Like, doesn't even reply to him. Makes no move whatsoever to obey. So, you know, he basically says, you know, it's war, but Obi-Wan is like, well, you know, this is a question for the Senate to decide what we're going to do. We're not going to be taking part in this internal matter. But he does, you know, still have a commitment to get the chairman back to their base and probably off planet alive. And so, you know, Anakin orders the clones to take him back to the base and keep him alive.
Despite the fact that the chairman is doing everything in his power to get himself killed.
Yeah.
You get the feeling that like he either wants to win this battle or die like a warrior's death, despite the fact that he's not really a warrior. And he severely underestimates the Talls. Like, the Talls clearly didn't trust the chairman any more than the chairman trusted them. And they've already set up an ambush. And so on the way back to the base, they are, in fact, ambushed. And they for the Talls being, you know, not advanced technologically, they sure have knowledge of the terrain and numbers on their side.
So, yeah, I want to call out. I don't know if you've seen Dune. I'm sure many of our listeners have seen some version of Dune or read the novels. And I definitely get some Fremen vibes from the Talls' tactics here, the way they pop up out of the snow like the Fremen would pop up out of the sand. And despite being, you know, it's a very similar tale, right? The technologically inferior force who is nonetheless, you know, dedicated to their cause and knows the terrain in a way that the outsiders cannot possibly are able to, you know, overwhelm and destroy these, you know, ostensibly superior outsiders with surprisingly few casualties.
Yeah. And there are some casualties. The clones get overrun pretty quickly. They're forced to beat a quick retreat. But not before Chairman Cho is wounded by a spear,
mm-hmm.
because he's an idiot and he's stupid, but not a coward, not a coward at all. He is out in the forefront, you know, trying to lead from the peak. Right. But doesn't go great for him. He gets speared in the back. He does manage to stay alive long enough to see Chuchi and Obi-Wan and Anakin kind of arrive with all the gunships as the storm lets up a little bit. And he's dumbfounded to hear that Chuchi was able to get in contact with the Pantoran assembly and that they consider him out of line and out of order. And so they have overruled him and given Chuchi permission to negotiate peace on their behalf, basically saying that, no, we don't want war. What you want is not what the people of Pantora want. And he dies dumbstruck and basically unbelieving that could possibly be the truth.
Right.
He said, you know, I did it. You know, for the good of my people, my final command is for you to kill all the Talls. And Chuchi's like, that's not really for the good of your people.
Yeah.
And you don't get to make that call. And I think the last thing he says before he dies is, I died for my people or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, again, I feel like the character strays pretty far into the pathetic. And where it's hard to feel bad for him in any way. And I don't think we're meant to feel bad for him, but I don't know. I feel like he sort of fails as a villain in many ways.
So where you don't like, so I hate characters who are stupid and cause bad things to happen. Like they used to do this with, if you watched The Walking Dead, like with Carl when he was like younger, like they'd be like, and they've done this even too in Star Wars. They're like, oh, there's a kid. Well, cause they're a kid, we're going to make them do something really dumb, which is going to cause something catastrophically bad to happen. Right. Like I hate characters like that where they like only exist to do something really dumb that then causes something bad to happen. I liked this because he gets what's coming to him for doing
that's,
that. Right.
That's true.
He's a really dumb, egomaniacal character. He causes something bad to happen. Everyone around him is like, you're being a dumbass. Don't do this. He does it anyways. And then he dies and he gets what's coming to him. And all too often, the characters who do dumb things, who cause bad stuff to happen, aren't the ones who get punished for their stupidity or their arrogance. It's other people who suffer. So I appreciated in this that he is the one who suffers for his arrogance and stupidity instead of a bunch of other people having
to
suffer.
He gets a bunch of clones killed. That's what I'm mad about. I
know,
think.
But you know what? None of those clones were named, so I feel less bad about it. Right? If they had named a bunch of the clones, there's we were talking about this before the show. There's actually a prequel comic to this called Cold Snap, I think.
Yeah.
And it's written by Pablo Hidalgo, and it actually has a couple of clones in it who are named. It's only like a 6-page comic. It turns out there was an entire series of comics for the first 3 seasons of Clone Wars that were associated with it, which I had no idea about. And it took us forever to find them online, which is crazy. You'd think they'd be everywhere, but they're not. It's really difficult to find them online, but we were able to do it. So we started reading through them, and it personifies the clones who are there a little bit and makes it a little bit darker. It was actually Pablo Hidalgo who wrote the first season of comics, which is pretty cool. If you guys know who that is, but, anyways, this whole scene, him saying I died for my people, it was a scene earlier in the episode where he tells Chuchi, like, you need to ask yourself the question, are you brave enough to die for your people? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And walks out in front of the talls and puts the spear in the ground and says, yes, it takes some amount of bravery to die for your people. But you know, what's even more difficult is living for them. Basically saying, like, if we engage in this war, you will die. Like, everyone here will die if we continue with this war, right? Because what will happen is there's not enough of us. You might wipe us out, but the force that comes after us is going to wipe you out, right? So you, for your pride, will die for your people. And sure, that's brave, but it is so much harder to be the bigger man and say, you know, we're not going to fight. We're going to go for peace. Like, we're going to let this violence go into the past, and we're going to end this war right here, which I thought was a pretty salient point.
Well, and so I like the way that she approaches this, right? And
right.
She initially wants Obi-Wan to do the negotiating, sort of referencing his reputation as a negotiator, which is hilarious if we think back to the Christophsis negotiations.
Also, his ship is called the Negotiator. Like,
right, right. Oh, that's yeah. So it's funny. But he says, your people started this war. You're the one who's going to have to end it. Like, and I think he's not doing this just to like push her to grow. But I think there's actually like a legal situation here where like he is a servant of the Senate. But this has been declared as an internal Pantoran matter. This is a Pantoran war, not a Galactic Republic war. And if he intervenes, he'll be out of line. And so I think that's really what he's doing. But it has the effect of pushing Chuchi to grow as a character.
I also think, I want to say this, he got egg on his face earlier because he told the Talls that there was going to be no violence.
Mm.
And then Chairman Cho immediately went back and incited violence. And so I think part of him also as well is like, well, the Talls aren't going to freaking trust me. Like, I just told them there was going to be no violence, and we clearly broke that word. Like, they're not going to listen to me a second time. And the other two things, like Chuchi needs to grow. This is an internal Pantoran matter. I think there was a host of reasons he could have chosen from to not say it. I like the fact that he didn't do it. And he was like, nope, you have to do it. Right.
Right.
Because Chuchi, you mentioned in the beginning, she has self-confidence issues. She's had self-confidence issues the whole time. It took her the entire episode to stand up to Chairman Cho, who was clearly a despot. Right. So it's like she's finally gotten to this point. I appreciated the way she approached it too, from a position of power, not from a, oh my God, I'm so sorry, we attacked you, blah, 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 blah. You know, but she approaches it like they're equals, not like she's groveling for forgiveness.
I think she also does something here that I want to say that I appreciate. I don't know if the writers would have had it in mind or not, but it's I'm taking it as a viewer that she picks up the chairman's helmet, right? And this is calling back the beginning of the episode. We find their spears left with droid heads, with clone helmets, sort of them sending a message like, you know, you sent your soldiers here, and we're sending a message. We're making an example that this is what happens. And so she is calling back to that, you know, that action that they took. She plants the spear and she puts the chairman's helmet on it, sort of acknowledging their victory against him, I think, in a way that gives the Tall's leader a way to go back to his people and say, we won. And so I think it's a very deft political maneuver on her part in terms of like getting the Tall's to back down in that moment. Now, by putting the chairman's helmet on a spear, she's sort of saying message received. So she doesn't even have to say we're leaving. She is, by doing that, sort of saying like, we've seen, you know, your strength. And now I'm asking you for peace. And this gives the Tall's leader, I think, a way to sort of, you know, say, okay, yeah, we're good.
You know, I didn't even catch that. That is actually really smart, though. I'm 100% certain that that was intentional, right? There's no way it wasn't. I didn't even catch that watching the episode that, yeah, she puts the helmet on top of the spear, mirroring the droid heads and the clone trooper helmets from earlier. That's good. I like it. It's like,
yeah,
it's like symmetry, right? It rhymes. That's what George Lucas always used to say. Like, you bring it back to the beginning. You say something at the beginning and you bring the end of the story back to it. So, I mean, I know you know, you said beforehand you were whelmed. I really like this episode for a standalone episode. And I don't feel like I'm generally a fan of like the One Piece standalone episodes, because I think it's so difficult to tell a story in 20 minutes, right? With any type of depth or any type of, you know, good moral or any type of character development. But I gotta say, for only having 21 minutes, this might be the best example of a self-contained story that they've done. Definitely, you know, up to this point, but even later on, like, I mean, holy crap, like Chuchi goes from a self, you know, conscious kind of scared senator to being someone who ends up being a leader for their people for years to come. And I mean, I had a good time. I feel like the story is mostly about her development, you know, through the other things, but I had a good time with it.
Yeah. You know, I think the chairman really in many ways as like a narrative device exists to sort of be a foil for her to test herself against and to sort of learn who she's not. And so I appreciate a lot of what was done with the writing and the portrayals in this episode by the voice actors were great. The animation was great. I loved a lot of this episode. Truly, I think what drags it down for me is just the overwhelming one-dimensional nature of Chairman Cho's character, because he was instrumental to every part of the plot. I feel like that the rest of it felt really well thought out and well developed, and his character being so flimsy really dragged it down for me. And so yeah, when I say I'm whelmed, it's very much like not that I thought this was a bad episode, right? I wasn't underwhelmed. But because like sort of the main, like the central kind of plot driver felt so flimsy, it really just sort of annoyed me at times when I didn't want to be getting annoyed. And so I don't know, you know, and for that reason, I wasn't overwhelmed either. And so while there's a ton for I think there's a ton to appreciate in this episode, it also highlights some of the things that are done much better in later seasons. And I think many of the villains that we get in episodes in later seasons are going to be more strongly developed or have, you know, more clear motivations than what we got here. But all that said, I love that we sort of, you know, the overall structure of this, I love that the separatists for once aren't the villain, but also victims of a a third party who also turns out not to be the villain. Right. So I really appreciated that. And like you said, it was nice that the chairman got what was coming to him.
So what do you rate the episode then?
Oh boy, I've talked myself in circles on this one. I think ultimately I'm going to give it a 7.5. I feel like it was a solid episode. I will watch it again. I'll probably still be annoyed by the chairman. But thanks to the deep dive into the trivia and the design choices, I'm going to appreciate those things more in the future. And hopefully that will blunt the impact of the chairman's abrasive nature.
So I
feel like you're going to give it a much higher rating.
Well, so I would have given it a 9 if it, how do I say this? I want to give it a 9, but I can't in good faith because it does have the flaws that are associated with the episode needing to be shorter, right? Like if this was an entire arc, I think it would have been fantastic. I think it maybe would have been one of the best arcs in season one, like up there with Ryloth. Because I really enjoyed where they were going with it, both at the beginning. Like, I love the horror vibe of the first episode so much. I would have loved if that was an entire episode by itself.
Right.
Like, the first episode was like a horror episode. And then they had more time to develop Chairman Cho, to develop Chuchi, the Talls, like, stuff like that. Like, I would have loved for this episode to minimum have been 2 episodes. And I think I could have easily given it a 9 then. I can't in good faith give it a 9 because they just like rocket through some of the resolution, and it isn't as satisfying as I think it could have been. However, I still love the TNG vibe that this episode has.
Right.
And so I'm going to give it an 8.5. It is an episode that I would literally watch again. Like, I watched it and immediately was like, man, I like that episode. Like, I would watch that episode again. It would not be one of the episodes that I skip if I were doing a season one watch through. It ends up setting up, this is one of the things where like we have the benefit of looking forward, like it ends up setting up Chuchi, and I really, really like Chuchi as a character. I like her in this episode. I like her in all the episodes that she shows up in. I love her in the Bad Batch. So for me, like, it's kind of like what we did with the Hondo episodes, where it's like, it's a Hondo episode, right? It's like, it's one of these, like I can't disassociate the character Chuchi in this episode from the character that I know she becomes in the later episodes. And so there's like a little warm spot in my heart for this episode just because she's in it. And I like her as a character, right? And so, yeah, I think 8.5 for me.
All right. Yeah, no, I mean, that's about what I thought you would land on. And I'm happy with this episode getting an overall 8. Like I said, I think there are certain things, you know, that as a consumer that bother me specifically more than they might bother other people. And, you know, I don't think I'm alone necessarily in that those things. But, you know, I think maybe I'm not in the majority. And that's okay.
Well, I think you're probably closer than I am. I think I was optimistic on this episode. Yeah, well, I mean, if you just look at IMDb ratings, right?
Oh, like, that's true. That's
IMDb,
true.
I think, has it as like a 7.6. So it's, you know.
Oh, okay. So I'm dead on.
Yeah. And I think usually we skew higher than IMDb by a little bit. So, I mean, this is one of the times where you and IMDb seemingly align, although I would not read the review that it sent to me. It was like, not another ice planet. Where's the oxygen coming from? There's no plants. And I was like, what type of freaking review is this? This is Star Wars, man. You gotta suspend that disbelief real early if you're worried about that.
Look, here's the headcanon that I have for why all of these planets have breathable air. It's Star Wars.
Yep. That's all you need.
Done. Move on.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how things work in the Star Wars universe. Planets just have breathable air 9 times out of 10.
Yep.
Well, I think overall, there's a lot to love about Trespass, and it's a fun episode that I would definitely recommend that nobody skip in season one. Do we have any trivia that we need to call out that we missed?
We should talk about who replaces Chairman Joe as part of the Pantoran. So this guy's name is
Baron Papanoida.
Baron Papanoida. And Baron Papanoida actually shows up in live action in Revenge of the Sith. He's in the opera house briefly, and it turns out he is played by none other than George Lucas himself. In cameo, which I sent a picture of him to Kutch, and it is a very, very silly image, and I love it.
It's quite the picture, but I feel like we definitely get some of the same sort of stylistic elements as we had from Chairman Cho, albeit not in, you know, like cold weather gear, but sort of a vaguely kind of militaristic style. Get up. But yeah, it's pretty funny. And so, yeah, Baron Papanoida also appears in the Clone Wars later on, although to my knowledge, not voiced by George Lucas.
No, voiced by Corey Burton, who also voices Cad Bane and I believe Count Dooku. There are a lot of very talented voice actors who do multiple voices in this show. But yeah.
So a couple of other things to all out here. It's just some fun trivia in the background. Thysen, the leader of the Talls, I believe refers to himself as Son of Sons, like sons as in like stars. And apparently they're in some of the old drafts of Star Wars scripts. There was a reference to a prophesized hero being called the Son of Sons, but it never actually made it into any movies. It's not actually anything official or canon. It was just sort of something that was in some of the drafts for a while. And so, you know, there are various fan theories out there, you know, like, is that, you know, like a title for Anakin Skywalker? Some people thought that during various celebrations in the movies, people are shouting that out, but that's all been debunked. There's no canon reference to this elsewhere, basically. It's just sort of like a title for this leader. We've also got, I think, a fun one about another, actually also involving C-3PO. So C-3PO gets his own speeder. The bikes that they drive, the swoop bikes, are called Freeco bikes, which apparently is just short for freezing cold.
Yep.
Which is pretty funny. But C-3PO drives his own speeder because they only hold one passenger. And apparently in one of the original scripts for A New Hope, 3PO references piloting speeders as being one of his 30 secondary functions. So it just leaves you wondering, what are the other 29? We've also got the cold weather clone gear draws pretty heavily from Empire Strikes Back concept and costume art by Ralph McQuarrie, Joe Johnston, and John Mollo. And I think those are kind of the ones that jumped out at me. Oh, they actually, one other one that I think is just funny. This must be a reference to the script, but it's from StarWars.com. So it is official. This is canon. After they negotiate with the Talls, Anakin and Obi-Wan are leaving, and then the Talls leader gives Kenobi a huge hug. And apparently the other Talls in the background are silently laughing. And so it just makes you wonder, is it like a joke? Do they know that, like, or are they like just like playing up that there's going to be peace? Or do they expect war? Or is there some kind of something else funny happening here? Like, it just makes me wonder, what are they laughing at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also should point out that, like, you mentioned the concept art, and Joe Johnson was one of the people. And this is something I learned in the Light and Magic documentary that's on Disney Plus right now. So Joe Johnson worked very heavily on Empire Strikes Back and the Hoth stuff. Joe Johnson decided after Empire Strikes Back, he did not want to work in special effects anymore. And so he told George Lucas he was going to leave Lucas or ILM. And George said, well, instead of leaving, what if I pay for you to go to film school instead? And he said, okay. So he goes to film school. He then directs Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Jumanji, the third Jurassic Park, and the first Captain America movie afterwards. So just a freaking string of bangers for Joe Johnson. We got, you know, those really awesome movies because George Lucas paid for him to go to film school, basically.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, What a career afterwards, right? Start out in Star Wars, you decide you want to leave Star Wars, and then the creator of Star Wars is like, actually, I think you need to be in film. And then you go on to just like drop movies that make crazy amounts of money. Some classics in there, right? Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, I think will be a classic for a long time. I think it's still a cult classic despite the many years since it originally came out.
I love that movie. That used to be one of my favorite movies when I was a kid. I thought it was so funny. But also Jumanji with Robin Williams. I mean,
yeah,
man, like that's, yeah. So anyways, just some weird linkages. There's tons of linkages. If you watch The Light and Magic, I know you don't like documentaries, but if any of you guys out there like documentaries, I cannot recommend enough Light and Magic. It is so good. Even if you have like never wanted to be a part of something like that, I leave that and I'm like ready to send in my application to ILM. Like as soon as I'm done watching that documentary, it's like, it just seems like so much fun. Like that it just seems like such a good time. And you know, it's really, really interesting. It goes all the way back to the very history, to their founding, all the way up to them basically being the driving force that pushed CGI into modern movies, for better or for worse. But the work they do is pretty incredible. So anyways, that's all I've got for this episode. You have anything else, or are we ready to call it?
No, I think that brings us to a close. What episodes are we going to be watching for?
Blue Shadow Virus and Mystery of a Thousand Moons.
Okay, so as I recall, you enjoyed these episodes.
Yeah.
I was a little iffy on them personally, but I'm going in with an open mind.
I wouldn't say enjoyed necessarily. I didn't dislike them, and according to IMDb, most people dislike them. I didn't actively dislike them. I wouldn't say they were my favorite episodes. I don't remember a ton about them, other than just like the general, like, you know, synopsis of the episodes. So I'm interested to see where I land on these after watching them again. I do, you know, I think I remember liking the first one a little bit better than the second one, because I think the first one is like a Padme Ahsoka team up type thing. And I seem to recall vibing with that one a little bit more than the second one, which is like a little weird Lost Boys story. But, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, yeah. And going with an open mind, and who knows, maybe they're going to land this time. Yeah. You know, it's definitely been a while since I first watched them. I don't think I've rewatched them in the last couple of years. So
right.
Hard for me to really say much beyond that. But we'll do that next time. Until then, may the force be with you.
And also with you.